Luke chapter 18, starting from verse 9. He, Jesus, also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted.
Thanks so much for reading, CN. Please keep that open in front of you, either in the Bible on page 877 or in your service sheet. Let me add my welcome to Ben's. My name's Andrew, and it's great to see a growing crowd of new faces at Candlewater Service. You're very welcome amongst us. I want to begin. I'm just going to follow the points on the inside of the service sheet if you want to know where we are in the talk. But I want to begin by asking you to imagine that you were God and that you have to decide other people's destinies. You get to decide where somebody will spend eternity, whether they get admitted to paradise or whether they're shut outside in hell. It's quite a big judgment call to make, in fact, the biggest ever judgment that you might ever make. And we don't get to decide that. None of us is going to be the judge on the final day. But we do get to judge in lesser things, which I think we quite enjoy being mini-God over other little questions, like who gets to win X Factor or The Voice or The Dance One, or, you know, and it's not just, you don't just watch it and watch Simon Cowell and the judges. I just watch the reruns, you know, on Facebook. It shows me best moments ever from The X Factor from the 10 years ago. But it's not just the judges who decide, but you, the studio audience, also get to decide. Or in fact, you at home. So we're actually live streaming this, aren't we? So the numbers come up on the screen and you can text one number or the other, and Jack makes money either way from the premium rate phone call. And one of my friends, this is years and years ago when I was at university, but it was early on in they sort of phone in to vote things. And she was so desperate for her particular act to win that she stole her housemate's phone so that she could vote on his phone several times on premium as well, just to try and boost it. And he got in all sorts of trouble with him afterwards. But you do get to decide that. Who's the winner of Eurovision? You know, it was done by audience vote and politics, as usual. Or you get to decide big political decisions. You know, we pride ourselves on being a democracy, and we go to the people to choose. Even though, you know, we're then not happy with the decision, or it splits us 50-50 almost. So two of the biggest votes in my lifetime have been the Brexit vote. You know, what was it, 49%, 51%? Like nail right on a knife edge. Or the Scottish independence referendum, you know, uncomfortably close. It just makes us unhappy with each other. But at least, you know, we decided. We've only got ourselves to blame, unless it was all fixed. If you're a real conspiracy theorist. I don't know how you feel about making those decisions about your own life. About how you feel about making decisions about other people's lives. But Jesus reminds us that there's only one judge of the whole earth, and he will on that day make a decision about each of our lives. Not whether we stay in the EU or not, that would be a very small political decision as a little may blip on history. But where each one of us spends eternity, will you be one of those welcomed into the kingdom of heaven? Or will you be one of those excluded, shut out on the last day? And it's not our decision. It's Jesus' decision. But supposing it were your decision, imagine Jesus asked you for advice. How are you going to make this biggest of all decisions, this biggest of all judgments about each person in this room, each person in London, each person in the world? Well, imagine what you could do is line everybody up with the very best person at that end and the very worst rotter at that end. And you somehow, it's like going into high order at primary school, it takes ages, but this time we're going to do in moral goodness order. And you have to be really honest about it, so there'll be some surprises. I mean, some of you look very respectable, and there'll be all sorts of dark shadows in your past. So if you're going to be honest, you're going to be at that end. No pretending. Imagine you lined up the person who'd lived the most notorious life right over there. In fact, they'd probably still be in prison, wouldn't they? It'd be a life imprisonment, serial killer kind of case, right out that door in the prison cell. And the person who's lived the best moral life, most sacrificial life at this end. And all of us lined up in that order, in moral goodness order. Where would you put yourself if you were honest? Where would you be on the line? And even more difficult question, where would the cutoff be for people who are good enough? How would you decide who you allowed into your heaven? There's all sorts of irrational ways people vote on X Factor, isn't it? They vote for the person who's most beautiful. Often it's not about talent, it's about how photogenic are they, how much does the audience fancy them. That could be one criteria. That's not going to be Jesus' criteria. It can sometimes be a sympathy vote, the person who's like the worst act, and people think, oh, let's just give them a break. That won't be his criteria either. How would you decide where would you put the cutoff? And I think lots of us say, well, good people like me, you should let in, but not bad people like Putin. You know, if I find the monster, you shouldn't let him in. But the trouble is, it's kind of subjective, isn't it? Because if you ask Putin the question, he would say, I presume, good people like me, you should let in, and bad people like the United States or like Zelensky, you should not let in. And fortunately, we're not our own judge, because we wouldn't be very objective. Jesus is the judge. And I want us to look at this little passage we had read, because I think it is the most subversive, shocking, upside down answer to that question that you find anywhere. If you've been a Christian a long time, you may know this answer, but let's still recover the shock of it. And if you're new to Christian things, I think you will find it really quite shocking. Here's Jesus' answer on the question of who gets to go into heaven, who gets to be welcomed into God's new creation. And the answer is good people are shut out and bad people are welcomed in. And it sounds absolutely scandalous, like Jesus got it absolutely wrong. Let's just look again. It's a story. It's a made-up story. It's not something that actually happened, but Jesus sort of illustrates it. Let me tell you about the principle. And he told the story to some people, verse 9, who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Okay, so this isn't people who are actually righteous. They're what we would call, they are self-righteous. So they think quite highly of themselves, morally speaking. I am one of the upright people here in Southeast London, unlike those chavs, unlike those, you know, fill in the gaps, unlike those immigrants. Apologies, John. Unlike those other people. But I deserve to be here, and I'm an upstanding member of society. I am. Meet the upstanding member of society, Mr. Pharisee. Verse 11. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I don't know what you think of that. Because in terms of absolute moral terms, you know, it's a kind of claim to have been innocent, right? So I haven't extorted anybody. You know, you can look at my financial accounts and you'll find that there's no dodgy dealings financially. I'm not unjust. You know, I deal with things fairly. I'm not an adulterer. You know, you could go through my phone and look at my WhatsApp history. You'd find nothing untoward, no secret messages to other women. So objectively, he's kind of a morally clean living guy. But the tone of it is quite obnoxious, isn't it? The sort of self-congratulatory. It's just, it's the worst thing about religious people, we often think, that the self-righteousness. Lord, I thank you that I'm not like other people. Those morally questionable people. You've heard me, some of you have heard me before, quoting from the Countess of Huntingdon. She was in the time of George Whitefield in the 18th century. She was a noble woman. She lived in, she was a member of the aristocracy. And she invited a friend of hers, who was the Duchess of Buckingham, who lived in Buckingham Palace in those days, to listen to George Whitefield, one of the Methodist revivalist preachers. Anyway, she wrote saying, a bit like maybe someone's invited you here today, she wrote saying, would you like to come along? We're having a special Jesus the Skeptic's Guide week. I'd love it if you'd come. You know, that sort of letter, but in a aristocratic way. And she got this letter back, which I find actually quite hilarious. But this is the wording of the letter. My dear Countess Huntingdon, I thank you for your invitation to attend the Methodist preachers. Their doctrines are most repulsive and strongly tinctured with impertinence, since they wish to do nothing but level all ranks and do away with all distinction. It's a monstrous thing to be told that your heart is as wicked as the common wretches that crawl on the earth. And I cannot but wonder that your ladyship should relish any such sentiments at variance with good breeding. Yours, basically, no, I'm not coming, the Duchess of Buckingham. I mean, the snootiness of it, I mean, it just makes me laugh. To be told that your heart is as wicked as the common wretches that crawl on the earth. I mean, no one would actually speak like that, would they? But we do kind of look down sometimes our noses at, oh, those people, unlike our kind of people. The way we do it in our society is the paedophile, isn't it? So everything's acceptable, but we find sort of one category of the super evil. So you're either the Russian, the Wagner group, the terrorist, or the paedophile, and they're evil, but the rest of us are all good. That's how we sort of do the line. But there can be a sort of self-congratulatory, oh, well, God, thank you so much that I'm not like other people. And maybe in some sort of moral framework, it's true. There's bad things he hasn't done. No extortion, no adultery. And there's good things he does do. I mean, he gives to charity. He says, I give a tenth of all I have. Which is more than you have to do. You have to tithe certain things in the Old Testament law. He tithes everything he gives to charity. He fasts twice a week. I think you're meant to fast once a year on the Day of Atonement. So he fasts 100 times more often than you have to. Yeah, he's religious. He'd be at church sometimes. He'd be saying his prayers. If he was in Iran, he'd do the 5 times a day prayer to Allah every day. He would give to charity. And he would congratulate himself for being so moral. That's a good person. And at the end of Jesus' little story, Jesus gives the bombshell, and he says, this man is not going to be accepted before God. Introduce the second guy, the bad guy. So the other guy, a tax collector. Now, don't think HMRC, you know, sort of bright recruits out of university, good at maths, upstanding moral citizens. Don't think that. Think occupied country. So this is Israel, but Roman soldiers march the streets, paying taxes to the oppressor who invaded them in an unwelcome way. So, I don't know, think of the one of the towns that's fallen to Russia, and you know, Ukrainians live there, and now Russian soldiers march around, and they say, give us some of your money, we demand taxes. But that kind of tax collector, so working for the enemy. Even worse than that, imagine someone who's a native but has worked out that they can get an easier life with the oppressor if they work for the enemy. So imagine a Ukrainian in that village who collects taxes on behalf of the Russians. I mean, you're going to really hate them. They're going to be the low life of the town. Here's a tax collector. And verse 13, he stands a long way away. So they're going up to pray, and there's the Pharisee over there, and he's a long way back. And he can't even look up. You know, sometimes you see people and they're just socially very awkward and they can't make eye contact. Well, he's like that, but with not just with people, but with God. He can't look at God. He doesn't lift up his eyes. And instead, he just beats his breast. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. He's not a good bloke. There's no suggestion here that, oh, he's... Did you not realize he's actually really good on the inside? That's how, you know, the modern Hollywood take would be on it. No, there's no suggestion of that. He's a bad bloke. He's done bad things. He's worked for the enemy. He's betrayed his own people. Tax collectors were notorious for overcharging. They're in a position of great power over the poor. And so they can exert that power to get a little bit extra, to live basically a life of exploitation. He's a nasty piece of work. A nasty piece of work. But he knows that about himself. And when he comes before God, he can't even look him in the face. I mean, you can't look God in the face, but he can't even look up to heaven. Looks down. God, be merciful to me. And Jesus' story says, yeah, God will. Verse 14, I tell you, this man, this tax collector, went down to his house justified, rather than the other. See, you could do. We tend to divide the world into good people and bad people. You know, on my scale, here we are all lined up, and there are the bad people, and there are the good people, and I'm probably just on the right side of the line, I think. And God doesn't divide the world into good people and bad people. God divides the world into bad people who think they're good, the self-righteous, and bad people who know they're bad. And the bad person who knows he's bad comes to God and says, can I have mercy, please? Lord, would you have mercy on me, a sinner? And God says, yeah, I would. Whereas the good person, the bad person he thinks is good, says, I don't need your charity, God. I don't need your help. It's like the person with advanced cancer who denies there's anything wrong and won't see the doctor. That's Jesus' image that we had in the children's talk. They refuse to get the moral medical help they need, the spiritual help they need. I'm fine, thanks very much. If there is a heaven, I'll get there on my own merits. And God can just see the good that I've done. I've done my best, and that better be good enough. It's all I can do. And Jesus says, no, that won't be enough. Trusting in your own righteousness will not be enough. But admitting before God that you're bad and that you need his mercy, he'll grant you mercy. Now, I mean, it sounds like it's very shocking. It really is shocking. So let's just think, I mean, who are the people who are going to get into heaven? You know, lots of the people in church aren't going to get in. There'll be people in church all across Britain, maybe here today, who think, I'm here in church and I'm a jolly good person. And Jesus says it's going to be a great shock to you on the last day. You won't get in on that basis. And there'll be people in prisons in the UK who've done all sorts of awful things, who've humbled themselves before Jesus, and they'll be there. They'll be welcomed in. It's going to be upside down. I remember years ago, I was in Eastbourne. I think it was Eastbourne. There's a prison near there. And a guy in this prison had become a Christian. Maybe it's Lewis Prison, is it, or somewhere. He'd become a Christian while on the inside and then had been released. And this local church was trying to help him rehabilitate. And so they'd welcomed him in. I think it had been like 10 days since he'd been released. And I was sharing a car journey with him. It's amazing, Blake. And he just said, oh, it's amazing what God's doing in that prison. I can't do the voice, but sort of proper, you know, East End sort of voice. It's amazing what God's doing in that prison. All sorts of people are being saved. Some of them even worse than me. Now, that isn't the morally superior looking down on other people kind of perspective. That's that I wouldn't have realized that God would be interested in me. But he is. And he's welcomed some even worse people. are welcomed in. It's shocking. But then at the end, Jesus gives the explanation of why God has done it this way. And I've quoted the verse in verse 3, but it's actually straight out of Jesus' words in verse 14. So point 3, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. But the one who humbles himself will be exalted. That's the principle. Because God really can't stomach pride. It's one of the sins that God finds most objectionable. Look at me, God. I'm so impressive. Much better than her. God can't stand that. And he is going to humble you if that's your attitude right now. But the person who comes before him humbly, Lord, I've messed up. I need mercy. God loves lifting up people like that. You might think this isn't morally right there, is it? I mean, how can God let off the guilty person and punish the kind of good person? Well, the answer is no one's good. The Pharisee is just as guilty. It's just full of pride. But Jesus is able to forgive the sinner on the basis of his own death on the cross. Not cheap forgiveness, not moral blindness. God can't tell the difference. But Jesus goes to the cross to offer his own life as a sacrifice, to win the forgiveness of those who call out for mercy. And the cross is the ultimate upside down thing, isn't it? You know, the most righteous person ever, the Lord Jesus Christ, sentenced to a criminal's death and dies. And yet, for the sake of the most wicked people, those even who are murdering him, and he cries out, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing, in order that they might be lifted up. See, it's just sort of how God rolls, you might say. He hates pride, and he loves to squish it. And he loves humility, and loves to raise people up from the pit. And so this is Jesus' answer. We're not going to choose. You can choose X Factor. You may have voted for Eurovision last night. But you're not going to choose this. You're not going to choose other people's destinies. You're not going to choose your own. I'm not going to choose my own. Jesus is going to choose. He's the judge of all the world. And he gives us his criteria. And they're upside down and surprising and shocking. And the good people, the people who think they're good, haven't got a chance. But the people who are willing to admit that they're bad, oh, Jesus says, I'm a doctor. I've come for the spiritually sick. I'm more than willing to treat you if you'll only come to me for mercy. Thanks for listening. We're going to leave a little pause and just 30 seconds or so just to reflect in our own hearts about what we've heard. And then we're going to pray together.